Hold it. The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
4 championships in the last 5 years. Yeah, I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, golden, golden.
That's right, Bay's Golden Days back for episode 3, and we got a big one coming at you because for the first time ever, it's official. 2 Bay Area teams in the finals. Oh, it calls for a celebration.
Yes, it does.
Yes, but we can't celebrate yes because we still got to break down what happened in the conference finals, the finals preview, and we got a little bit of Sharks. We'll talk about it all. We just want to thank the fans for downloading on iTunes, Google Play. However you're listening, keep on listening, and let's get right into it.
If you a champion, show me you a champion. If you a champion, show me you a champion.
The rematch we've all been waiting for. The king on a quest. The champs looking for the repeat. Either way, it's about to get historic. LeBron and Steph. The Cavs and Dubs at it again. The NBA Finals, it's on. Game 1, Cavs, Warriors, Thursday at 9 on ABC.
The rematch we have all been waiting for, the Warriors and the Cavaliers, 2016 NBA Championship. But we got to put the brakes on real quick. We got to go back and look how this all happened. Let's talk about the conference finals. Last time we talked, the Cavs were up 2-0 on Toronto, and no one gave the Raptors a chance. They said it was all over. They'll be out taking views, looking off of Drake. But I said, don't sleep on the Raptors at home. They can go back and win one. Hey, look at the podcast. The evidence is there. But then, as the series went on, we saw, hey, they took another one, but at the end, they just couldn't survive.
Their crowd had them just flowing perfectly, and that's exactly what they needed. They won 2 games. I don't even think any of us gave them 2 games. I think we all gave them 1. I think the entire world gave them 1.
But nobody gave them any.
Except Toronto. Toronto gave themselves 2. Right. They believe they could have won, and that it showed. The 2 games they got, they should be happy with what they got. That was better than anybody expected, and they played well in those games, but the Cavaliers also played bad, and 3 and 4 in Toronto were just abysmal games by the Cleveland Cavaliers. They did not look like the team that just won 10 straight games, going for the record 11.
Right, trying to go undefeated. No, they did not look like the team that just went on that long streak. Kevin Love definitely struggled in that series a little bit. They started to look a little bit more like the three-point shooters are where they're going off doing all these three-pointers. They're actually shooting more than the Warriors, have a better three-point percentage. They have the best in the postseason right now, though. So the Cavaliers are definitely playing a different style of basketball.
Yeah, and that change of basketball style has been by the eruption of Channing Frye into their offense, almost playing about 15 minutes a game, and he's just strictly out there for that three ball. He's coming in there, and every shot he takes is a three-point shot, and he's hitting a good percentage, which could be scary in the long run. It could be, especially for the Warriors in the NBA Finals. But against the Raptors, he did work, especially when Kevin Love couldn't. Like in Game 3, Kevin Love scored 3 points. He was 1 for 9 with 3 rebounds and 2 assists. And this is who you traded the number 1 pick for. He cannot be doing this and expect the Cavs to ever have a chance of winning in any game.
Exactly. And this is the Kevin Love that we're not used to seeing. He's definitely slimmed down a little bit since his days from the Timberwolves. He's not that presence getting those offensive boards, getting down there. He's actually the worst rim protector in the postseason right now. And he's not really doing much to help the Cavs.
Oh, he did not help the Cavs at all against Biombo, who's got 26 rebounds in Game 3, a Toronto playoff record. And 8 of those boards were offensive. How big that is to a team in the playoffs down 2-1 to get those many rebounds, especially 8 offensive rebounds. That's 8 extra possessions that he allowed his team to have. And that it shows with the score. They won by 15 points. You add 8 extra possessions, that's 16 points at the least. I'm not saying that's what got them that, but that was a huge factor in their success.
Bismack Biyombo definitely came in like his big idol, Dikembe Mutombo.
No.
And he was scaring off, not too much LeBron, but the rest of the Cavs from driving in. Because the Cavs so far through the playoffs have only averaged 23.1 drives per game. And that's the fewest in the playoffs between any team. This team that has LeBron that's known for his drives. Now they're all of a sudden shooting threes.
And look at Kyrie Irving. Exactly what Biombo did is stop them from driving. Kyrie Irving only had 13 points that game, and he shot 3 from 19 from the field. That is disgusting. If he didn't get to the free throw line, he would have only had 7 points because he was perfect at the line with 6 for 6. And one number that's going to affect Kyrie Irving and the Cavs later on when LeBron isn't going to be able to be on the floor and control the game, and he had 1 assist. For your point guard, you need to have more production with the facilitating the ball than that. Your offense cannot just run only when LeBron is bringing the ball up and in control.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Like we said, they went on the shooting frenzy with the threes, set the NBA record for threes with 25 in a game. But besides that, playing a different brand of basketball, it was a little good to see them face a little bit of adversity, if you would call it that.
I wouldn't even call it that.
I wouldn't call it that, because we'll talk about some more serious adversity that's been going on in the Western Conference Finals, where it's actually a hell of a series. And let's see what Draymond got to say about some adversity.
You know, everybody look at 73 wins and say, wow, this team never hit no adversity. But there's adversity in every season. You know, it all comes in different forms. But when you're talking down 3-1 and everything's on the line, that makes it 10 times worse, you know. So it's definitely the biggest thing that this team has had to overcome. And it took a great, tremendous effort, you know, and fight.
The Warriors definitely had to fight in this series. This was not no cakewalk. This was not no Eastern Conference. This was the series that I have been waiting for all year, personally. And going in, last time we talked, the series was tied 1-1, going back to OKC. You know, KD and Russ had to protect home court and go to town, and they just went off. KD, spectacular game, 33 points, 8 rebounds, while Russell Westbrook had 30 points, 12 assists, and 8 rebounds. And you know, they both shot over 50%. They just came out on fire, and they were really unstoppable.
The entire team shot 50% for the night, going 46 for 92. When a team shoots like that, it's very hard to beat them, especially when their top two players are scoring the way they did. Just getting 66 out of those points, especially early, and just shooting amazing. I felt like every time they were putting the ball up, it was going in. The Warriors had no answer, and they were just getting out-rebounded 38-52. And I felt as if every time Russell Westbrook or any Thunder player was driving, they were getting to the foul line. They shot 37 free throws that game and hit 33 of them. That's 89%. To the Warriors, only 25 shots and only hit 19. You're literally getting 12 extra chances at easy points with the clock stopped. And that's too many for any championship team to give up. And they got rocked in Chesapeake Arena.
There's no doubt about it. They gave up way too many easy shots, like the second point rebounds. Steve Adams was huge on the boards. Ibaka was huge on the boards. Cantor was huge on the boards. They all had over 10 rebounds. Like you said, at the free throw line, getting those second chance, third chance opportunities. And they just moved the ball better than the Warriors. They played their offense better than the Warriors played their offense. OKC beat them in assists. They beat them in the turnover ratio. And they beat them in actually 3-point percentage also. So look at that. 50% overall for the team. And they were just shooting. And the only thing that could stop them was the Draymond kick to the crotch.
Yeah, and as Steven Adams said, the man's pretty accurate. If anybody's watched Draymond Green play, he does that every time. That's just part of his game. That's just part of his demeanor. That's just how the game is flowing. And that's just him. I don't think it was intentional. The NBA has their own rulings on it because they see it and they just are kind of forced with their hand to make a decision on something. And it's put him in a detrimental spot, especially the Warriors too, because if he gets another flagrant foul, that's a suspension. A flagrant 2 is 2 games, and he's 2 technicals away from getting a suspension from that. Going into the NBA Finals, that's going to be very costly, and he has to watch himself, which he did later on in the series, but you could tell in games 3 and 4 in Chesapeake Arena, it hurt him. It hurt his game mentally, especially on focusing on the game just himself and playing his type of game. He was not able to be physical because he's worried, because he knows his reputation is going to get him that call that's going to hurt his team badly. And I know he's a team player and he does not want that to happen.
It definitely seemed like after that play, after the kick to the gonads, he was definitely a different player. He definitely felt it from the OKC fans in both game 3 and 4, because he was getting a hail of boos every time he touched the ball, which some players like because it takes attention off of other players. But it looked like it affected Draymond to a certain extent, because he really did play 2 of the worst games in his career almost.
Easily. I've seen him play better games as a rookie than those games that I saw. He looked as if he was playing like a rookie. And for a guy who's supposed to be our big three, like part of our big three, and he's our big number three, and he does so much for this team because he facilitates, grabs boards, and gets points. When he has the ball in his hand and he's playing horribly as he was, those are a lot of turnovers, and that affects the game just for the team, like the whole flow for the team to get their progress and start rolling. And that was never possible. Too many turnovers, just bad basketball.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't the Warriors basketball. And we talked about that in both games 3 and 4. Because we look at it, like we said, the game was very physical between Draymond and Steven Adams down in the post. There was more than just a couple kicks, a couple elbows, whatever it was. But it was physical for everybody on the court. Curry was getting harassed both games 3 and 4. And it bring up the questions if people thought that Curry was playing hurt. Me, personally, I don't think he was playing hurt. I think he was just playing beat up. Because they were honestly putting hands on him anytime they could. This wasn't no regular season basketball. This looked like some of the old school basketball that we saw back in the day. It's playoff basketball. There's been a lot of calls that haven't been called. I heard Bob Myers on the radio, the GM for the Warriors, talk about it. He was like, wow, Curry is really getting hands put on him. And I think it's taken a little bit of toll in those games 3 and 4.
Every time he was running around or before the screen, they would be pushing him into screens, just bumping him in every single type of action. Players that aren't even guarding him, if he's running by him, they were just giving him elbows. And it shocked me to see the little touch fouls the Oklahoma City Thunder were getting on their end. But for Steph Curry, there was nothing off ball. And these refs see it the entire time. And he gets fouled more on threes than any other player, but gets the least calls. They are hitting him on the every follow through. But if any other player gets that, it's an automatic 3 shots at the free throw line and a potential 4-point play. To me, needs to be fixed immediately because these refs aren't giving him the benefit of the doubt just because he takes so many, makes so many, and he's too damn good at doing it.
Yeah, that's true. You can't just give him every shot he doesn't make two to add on to the free throws. That would just be unfair. The man would be putting up 50 every night. But that was the thing with the Thunder's athleticism and their length getting onto him, because it seemed like it affected him. Because in game 3, he was 3-for-11 from the 3-point line. In game 4, he was 2-for-10 from the 3-point line. So that definitely wasn't the Warriors that we're used to seeing. As in game 4, they got outshot again, 43-41% from the field. And this was just not the Warriors basketball. First time they've ever lost back-to-back games this whole entire season. They went a whole season without losing back-to-back. And here's OKC putting in work.
If you heard the last podcast, I called them losing on their going on their first 2-game losing streak of the season, and I said that they would sweep the rest of the games. I wasn't 100% accurate because I said that they would lose games 2 and 3 in a row, but we lost game 1, won game 2, and then lost 3 and 4, but then swept 5, 6, 7. But what made us lose was, as he said, we were just getting one outplayed and out-rebounded. In game 4, we got out-rebounded 56-40, and they had 16 offensive rebounds. Once again, how many potential extra plays they had. I felt as if every time they were putting the ball up, they had 2 tries every time to get a bucket. And I remember Marcus hearing me. I was going crazy just watching this. Because then they would get to the free throw line easy, just under the basket, easy points in the paint. Like, they outshot free throws 31-40-29. They made 31 of them, as the Warriors only made 19. For the Warriors, you have to hit those free throws. Those are points that are easy points, literally called a free throw. You got to hit those. And one thing that Billy Donovan did well, but I absolutely hate it and can't wait for the NBA to get to changing it, is he used the Hack-a-Shaq rule while they were winning, and it cut out any type of momentum and flow the Warriors ever got. It was almost as if he was using them as timeouts without needing to take those timeouts, because timeouts are so important in big games like these.
That's a ridiculous rule. No one wants to see that rule. It really just ruins the experience of a game and slows down the pace so much. And that's not what we want to see in the playoffs. We don't want to see guys chucking up bricks. But like you said, it really comes down to the statistics. Look what happened in game 3 and game 4. It was dominant across the boards. Like you said, rebounds, free throws, assists, steals, blocks, turnovers. What do you want to talk about? The OKC dominated in every single category. In game 4, they both hit 9 3-pointers. So the Warriors definitely weren't hitting their shots, and they were on. Game 5 was coming around, and the curse from Little B was coming around. That's right, KD. There's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide. Little B, whoop whoop, Bay Area.
You thought you had it beat.
You said that I'm whack. See me on the court. Score on me if you talking about points. I like Rock Nation and I love Jay-Z. But on Red Side, I'm screaming, fuck KD, bitch. Fuck Kevin
Durant. All right. No disrespect to KD, but you got to think, is the curse real? The OKC was up 3-1 in the series. But what happened? Game 5, Warriors back in Oakland. They win the game 120-111, and Steph says, we're not going home.
No, we aren't. Curry went off, 31 points, 3 trays, 10-for-10 for the line, which I was happy to see that we were getting to the free throw line. We had the rebound game tied, which is great, and finally shot more free throws with them, where we shot 34 to their 24, and we hit 31 of those, and that was huge for us. Those 31 points that we just hit, and we only missed 3 free throws, that is great. But Steph Curry with 5 steals and especially major ones at the end of the game. That was the most amazing thing to me for me to see, especially because everybody talks smack about his defense, says his defense is the worst part of his game. And as we saw Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook laughing after game 5, but we know they're not laughing anymore.
Yeah, they ain't laughing, because what we saw in this game was not only the Splash Brothers come back, but we saw the big man putting in work for the Warriors. And we saw them win the rebound margin. They won it 54-50. That's right. It was all about the big men. Draymond, 11 points, 13 rebounds. Draymond finally came back, was playing big. Spates comes back, hits a couple threes.
Bogut had 14 of those rebounds. And Adams this time had less rebounds than Bogut. And the best thing about Bogut, he played more than just 10 minutes. He put in a great 30 minutes. I can't even remember the last time Bogut played an efficient 30 minutes and put in 15 and 14 and shot 7 for 9 from the field. And guess what? He hit one of those 2 free throws when he got the Hack-a-Shack. And that made me so pumped.
Bogut, he had a double-double, and that really made the difference in that game. They won the category of steals, 13-8. They had more blocks, 7-2, and they're overall playing the better basketball. They had more assists, they shot better, and they overall just won the game.
Yeah, they did, and Westbrook, 7 turnovers, and even though he had 31, 7 rebounds, and 8 assists, those 7 turnovers were huge. They came towards the end of the game, and we D'd up. That's the Warriors basketball that I was used to seeing all last year and this year, and not even at its complete efficiency. But game 6, that is where we came to life.
Yeah, no doubt. You talk about those turnovers from Russell Westbrook. Turnovers were the key for game 6 in the Warriors and OKC, because there were 6 turnovers in the final 2 minutes and 55 seconds for Oklahoma City. And Russell Westbrook had 3 in those final 55 seconds. And that's what really made the key factor in that 108-101 loss. You know, the Thunder led 83-75 heading into the fourth quarter. And what does that remind you of? Regular season, where they had a fourth quarter lead and blew it. Like I said, you don't always want to look at a regular season, but there are some trends. And KD came out tonight and just tried to do way too much by himself. He tried to play a little bit of that hero ball, shot 10 for 31 and was 1 for 8 from behind the arc. That's not the KD we're used to seeing. Russell Westbrook still balled out, had 28 points, 9 rebounds, 11 assists, but those turnovers were just crucial. He had 11 assists and 0 turnovers in the first 3 quarters, but he had 0 assists and 4 turnovers in the fourth quarter.
And we cannot thank Klay Thompson enough for going off, as I like to call him, Corey Matthews from Boy Meets World. Because if you look at him, they look exactly alike. This man set the new record for playoffs for threes in a game with 11. The previous record was held at 9. All right shooting game otherwise, 14-31. He was hoisting, but we needed him because he gave the rest of the team the spark to show we are not down and out. We can win this. And it gave Steph Curry the spark he needed to end the game with a bang, who finished with 31 points, 6 threes on shooting 9 for 22 from the field with 10 rebounds and 9 assists. And he took over and he became the human torch that we've seen all season.
Right? Look at that. Getting 10 boards, 31 points. But that was the thing. He came out a little slow. Had 0 points in the first quarter. Klay got it going. Curry told him, Klay, you got to take over right here. This is your moment. And then what do you know? We saw Klay going off. Curry was going off on the sideline. Hopped right back in. He's like, yeah, I want some of this. I want some of this action. But 3-pointers were huge in this game because Golden State hits 46%, hit 21 of 45, while OKC only hit 13%. Only 3 3-pointers, 3 for 23 the whole entire game. Other than that, OKC out-rebounded them. They got to the line more. They had more points in the paint. They had more blocks. I mean, they played pretty well regardless of that. They just got beat behind the 3-point line.
And the end of the game is where we just locked down on our defense and closed out the quarter strong. And that's been a case for all good Warrior wins, has been they close out quarter strong. And that's so important for any quarter. It doesn't matter if it's the first, second, third, or fourth. If you close a quarter strong, it's momentum into the next quarter and it allows you security. And that's what the Warriors did. And they D'd up and they played great basketball in the final 5 minutes of that game.
No doubt about it. And you talk about D. They made an adjustment and bring Andre Iguodala starting out of the second half because they said, we got to get to KD right away. We're going to put on. And it made a difference because there's no one else like Andre Iguodala who plays consistent D against superstars like KD and LeBron at the level that he does.
His on-ball defense is incredible, and I love seeing it because he shows up at the times needed most, and that's when we need him to guard the best player. You can argue Kevin Durant is a top 3 player. I don't know who's going to doubt you on that. He is easily a top 3 player in the NBA, and Andre Iguodala played pretty damn well against him. His hands were in his face the entire time, getting on that ball before he was able to get a good shot up, and he changed the game at towards the end of the game for the Warriors to get that W.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That D was key. And you got to think, did the pressure get to OKC? Because after losing game five, after not being able to put it away, they had to go back and say, hey, this is our biggest chance to win at OKC because we don't want to go back to Oakland. We don't want to go back. So you got to think if that was maybe on their minds. I don't think so. They're professional athletes, but we saw what happened. They lost game six pretty bad. This was, if you want to call it, the choke game of the series, because they did have Leafs in the fourth quarter, just a couple of people calling them Chokelahoma and stuff. But this was the game that they had, and they could have put the Warriors away, but they had to go back to the Bay. So we're going to say what's up to E4Day.
Yep.
Nope. Yep. Did it happen in one day?
Nope.
Came a long way?
Yep.
Never know what kind of angle.
No.
Crossover, break your ankle.
Yeah.
Slap you with the rock.
No.
Steph Curry with the shot.
Yeah.
Suckers.
No.
Splash Brothers.
Yeah.
Ain't no stopping.
No.
Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
Under pressure, is he choking?
No.
Do it big like Bogut.
Yeah.
Never let him tell us that we can't.
No.
Go hard like Barnes in the paint.
Yeah.
Never ever slowing up the pace.
No.
Shoot a three-pointer in his face.
Yeah.
Everybody say Warriors.
Warriors.
Everybody say Warriors.
Warriors.
Yup. Did the Warriors win game seven?
Yup.
That's right. Game seven, they won it 96-88, becoming the 10th team in NBA history to rally down from a 3-1 deficit.
And this was a game that had everybody watching with TNT with its exclusive show and had 15.9 million viewers average for the entire game, which was the most ever for an NBA game. And it did not prove less than being an amazing game with the Warriors winning, which I am so happy about. Back-to-back Western Conference champs.
Yeah, the game did not disappoint at all. Starting from the get-go, the Warriors made a few changes like they did in the second half. Iguodala came out to start only for the second time this season, so he was in the starting lineup. And KD, the thing about it, Kevin Durant was shooting twice as more when he wasn't guarded by Iggy, so Iggy really had an effect on him because he just couldn't get comfortable, couldn't get the shots off, so he wasn't looking for shot. But we just got to talk about the Splash Bros and what they did. 36 points for Curry, 8 assists. Klay had 21. It didn't matter. He hit 6 for 11 threes. Curry hit 7 for 12. They set an NBA record through this series. That's right. Not just one, both of them. We already talked about Klay's record game, but the NBA record for 3 points in a series. Curry hit 32 in a series. Klay hit 30 in a 7-game series. The record previously was 28. So this is like the 3-point record before where Steph broke it and then Klay broke it, but no one noticed it because Curry broke his record that was already before. They just both broke the record for most 3 points in a series, and that's what really separated them.
It really did, especially in Game 7. It showed, especially late game. But for me, the biggest factor in Game 7 that just set the spark on the entire team, I could see it in their eyes, and they just gained respect, was for Anderson Varejao when he came in for those 2 minutes and got 2 points and two assists and took a charge. I was going crazy, and the team literally lit up, their eyes, their emotions, and that's when everything started to change, and that is when the Splash Brothers started going and started hitting those threes, and they started playing some Warrior basketball.
Ooh, he gave you those best 2 minutes of his life right there. The Brazilian blur was in full effect. Him and Barbosa were out there giving the bench a little bit of juice, and that's what came through for the Warriors. The strength in numbers that they're always talking about really prevailed in this game, and it showed. It was an all-around effort. Overall, the Warriors just shot better. They out-rebounded them 56-54. That was a big key because obviously that was second chance opportunities. They limited that, and the Warriors got back to the basketball that they were playing and the key to success, and ended up winning the game, winning the series in seven.
And the refs let them play this game, and it made me so happy because this is the Western Conference Finals, game seven. You got to let these boys play. There's got to be physical play. There has to be contact. You can't call every little touch foul, and it showed because the Thunder only shot 17 free throws and the Warriors only 8, but that just shows only 25 free throws were shot the entire game. That is great officiating because there was tough play, which you expect in a game seven for this team who has an opportunity to go to the NBA Finals, which is something that most players ever dream of and never get to accomplish. So I was so happy with the way the refs officiated, and it made the game 10 times better. And the Warriors just outshot the Thunder. 17 threes the entire game. Thunder only 7. You're not going to be able to beat the Warriors like that. And to me, the Warriors did not even have a good game. They did not even breach 100 points. And they won that game by 8. that just shows how good our defense was that game.
Yeah, exactly. D'ing up and beating them at their own game with rebounds, second point chance, and they were just overall the better team, and it showed throughout the series when it was down 3-1, and a lot of people have given up and said, oh, wow, it's over. This team's not historic. They don't compare to the Bulls at all, the 72-10 Bulls. But look at them now. Look at how this just adds to their legacy. I think a little bit. Look at what they've come through now. You want to talk about adversity like we started the whole segment off with Draymond Green. Look at what they've gone through now to make it to that second back-to-back for that rematch against a healthy LeBron, a healthy Cavs team, and you know what's coming up. But final thoughts on this series?
For the Warriors, who last season, when they won the championship, everybody doubted them, put an asterisk next to their championship saying that they beat depleted teams, nobody was healthy when they played them, and now we've come without having Stephen Curry for like majority of the playoffs, and now come back after being down 3-1 to take down a great Oklahoma City Thunder team, and now going to the NBA Finals to play LeBron James healthy. Healthy is the key word. Nobody can say anything if we win this time, and this NBA Finals is going to be one of the most entertaining in a while.
Yeah, it should be. It is a great matchup, but I just want to say salute, hats off. Hey, Oklahoma City, they succeeded expectations, no doubt about it. I don't know if how many people even had them beating the Spurs, except for me, of course. But I don't know how many other people had them beating the Spurs and going on to beat the Warriors at first. And then going up 3-1 on this historic team. I can't call them Choklahoma. I can't. They had one game where they let it slip, but no one expected them to win. They took the Warriors to 7 on his third team. We don't even know if the Cavs will take the Warriors to 7. We'll see about that in our next preview. But it brings up the question now. KD's been in the league for a minute, and he still hasn't won a ring. He hasn't been back to the finals since he played LeBron way back when LeBron still had his original hairline. So we got to think, will KD leave OKC? Your thoughts?
He's got the options. And once again, yeah, you have to give the Oklahoma City much, much mad respect because what they did was amazing. They played great basketball, but at the end of the day, they got beat by a better team who just buckled down. They had our number at the beginning. They played well, but once we started rolling and got back to our game, nobody could stop us. It showed during the season, only 9 teams were able to do that, and the majority of them were under 500. Those were games the Warriors didn't come to play. But hats off to them. And Kevin Durant, he is in a very interesting position because there's talks where he could go home to Washington, go to Los Angeles, come to the Warriors, go to the Knicks. I've heard so many different things, and everything is speculation because after the way they ended and Kevin Durant's speech at the post-game conference after Game 7, it showed he really wants to stay in Oklahoma City, but I don't think it might be the best call for him. I guess right now, the best call would be sign a 1-year and go into with an option for the second year for his player option because the money he can make is a lot bigger with the NBA TV deal going in at the next year. But he has a good thing right now. I don't think that he can go to any other team where they're going to be able to offer him the tools that he needs to win immediately like this team has. I think he needs to look at what Oklahoma City can give him in this offseason, and I think he needs to have a face-to-face sit-down with Russell Westbrook. I think they need to determine who the clear number one is on that team, because if Kevin Durant is not number one, I don't think he should be there. At the end of the day, he is a number one player. I'm sorry, Russell. You're, as Mark Cuban said, the only statement I'll ever agree with him, you are an all-star, not a superstar.
Ooh, harsh words for Russell Westbrook, but that's the thing. They got to sit down and figure out what they're both doing because Russell Westbrook's free agency, he comes up the year after Durant. So that's why I think the best thing for KD would be to stay in OKC for at least another year. Him and Westbrook have one more shot at it, then they figure out what they're both doing. But yeah, that's the thing. Where else would KD go? What spot are you put to be in a better opportunity? Because who are you going to play with that's better than Westbrook? There's only one point guard in the league I could think of that's better than Westbrook, and his name is Steph Curry, and he plays right here in the Bay Area. So, I mean, unless you're coming to the Warriors, like some of those crazy rumors suggest, which would just be unfair. But unless he comes to the Warriors, where's he going to go? Maybe San Antonio? Go play with Kawhi and LaMarcus? I mean, we'll see if that fits. There's always the talk about him going back home to Washington. I don't think he wants to go play for the Wizards.
Mm-mm.
John Wall is cool, but I don't think he wants to do that. I think his best option is to stay in OKC and just figure out what him and Westbrook are going to do. And hell, they might even stay for 1 year and then go leave together in free agency. They'll say, hey, let's go find another team. But I like the core they have. I'm a big fan of Steve Adams. I like that Aussie. He's a crazy mutt. But I think it'll turn out well for no matter what he does. He's going to get paid. KD, superstar.
They just need to keep the pieces around him to like make him want to stay because Steven Adams, huge. That's one guy I'm giving huge respect to. that is one guy in the league that I would never want to play against, but that's the guy who I'd want to have on my team immediately. That's one person that's probably hated around the NBA just because when they have to play against him, he does not hold back. He gives that rugby 100% physical play, and some players can't handle that, especially with his big size. At one point, I saw him palm the ball and throw it like a Tom Brady with a perfect dime through the seam, and it was just...
out here playing dodgeball.
Exactly, and you just see him so big, and he's getting better every game. He's just... becoming more powerful, more dominant as a big man, and OKC has to re-sign him, and they need to give him a contract extension. He needs to get paid, and he's going to be stuck there. And I think that would be huge for Kevin Durant to want to stay. I think Kevin Durant has a lot of respect for him and loved his inside play, because that will be deadly later on, especially next year if the core is still together.
Yeah, exactly. And you got to think about, like I said, one of the options was San Antonio, they said, but they're going to lose Tim Duncan probably, most likely. They might lose Tony. They might lose Manu. Who knows what's going to happen with the Spurs? They still got a couple young players, but what situation are you going to be better off in? But that's another thing. We'll think about that all next year, because there's only two teams left in this year. That's the NBA Finals, the rematch, 2016. LeBron James, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving, Draymond Green, Kevin Love. Big three versus big three. Who's going to be man of the year?
2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
I'm lucky enough to get here again, then it'd be fun to do it. But I didn't win a championship, but I've done a lot of good things, in this first year back, and hopefully I can continue.
He's on the drive.
LeBron James.
This game has always been about buckets.
You appreciate how tough it is to get back here. That's the one thing I've learned, is just you can't take anything for granted, because it's such a grind, it's such a battle against a great Thunder team that pushed us to the brink. So you got to be appreciative of this accomplishment, and now I look forward to getting four more wins.
Steph was definitely happy with his performance, getting the win in Game 7. And now he's got to be very appreciative, because he's got the rematch. And I think this is the rematch he wanted. I think he wanted the Cavs because, like Carney mentioned earlier, there was a lot of people who said, oh, the Warriors' path was beat up. They didn't play nobody who was healthy. They didn't play anybody who was at full strength, full numbers. But look at this year. Look who they've played. Look at the path they've gone through this year. Look at the cakewalk now that Cleveland has gotten. And look at that now. They're meeting up in the finals. Everybody's healthy, and it should be one hell of a series.
Everybody was saying that we weren't good enough to beat the Cavs full strength and everything. And then their next excuse after we beat them twice in the regular season, first on Christmas 89-83 in Oracle, and then January 18th by 34, 132-98 in Cleveland, their next excuse was, oh, well, David Blatt was still this coach. Now with Tyronn Lue, everybody expects everything to be different. And for me, the only difference is, which is the only scary aspect, is Tyronn Lue understands that give the ball to LeBron James.
Right, let LeBron handle the offense, but with Blatt coaching. But either way, it was Coach LeBron going against the Warriors either way. And this was the worst that the Cavs played against any other regular season opponent. They had 92.3 points per 100 possessions, and that was the lowest against all opponents all seasons long. The Cavs' big three, like I mentioned earlier, Love, Irvin, and LeBron, of course, went 3-for-25 from three-pointers versus the Warriors in this game combined. That's terrible. You see now how they're shooting so great in the playoffs, best shooting team in the playoffs right now, but you saw what they did against the Warriors, because Warriors are the best defending team, shot defending team, shot contested team left in the finals, with Draymond Green being at the top at the charts. But it just shows, with Kevin Love only having 6.5 points per game, lowest all year. I mean, the Golden State Warriors didn't even have to bust out that death lineup that they used in 2015 for the finals. They didn't even have to bust that out. It wasn't even fair. It wasn't even close. And the Warriors took care of business.
The only bright spot of Kevin Love in both those games was in the first matchup in Christmas Day in Oracle, where he grabbed 18 rebounds, shot horribly, 5-for-16 from the field, only 10 points. But those 18 rebounds were easily one of the best rebounding games he's had as a Cavalier. He has not been close to showing those 30-30 game abilities like how he had in the Minnesota Timberwolves days. And the second game, he had 3 points with only 5 shots and 6 rebounds. Completely took him off the glass. And which is going to be huge for them to win against the Warriors, is especially the Warriors have gone through this tough rebounding battle in this past 7-game series. They found a new sense of life down underneath the rim. And I just do not see Kevin Love being able to get a 15-rebound game again. And if they do, I see them winning every game that he does, because those are going to be huge, pivotal possessions that he'll be able to get in the NBA Finals for him.
The Cavs have not gone to a smaller lineup, but like we said, a lot of people don't like to look at the regular season because David Blatt was the coach. They're running a little bit of a different style offense now. So, I mean, let's look at 2015 Finals a little bit just to see what happened in that. Of course, the Warriors won, but of course, there's no Love, no Kyrie. Kyrie got hurt in game one, but the Warriors were +4 throughout three quarters, but +39 in the fourth quarter and overtime in those games, which means they were just the more clutch team. LeBron, where was he to show up? LeBron took more shots than the next three Cavaliers on his team combined, and he shot 24 from 90. That's 27% from outside of the paint. So of course, LeBron's known for getting to the hole, but like I said earlier, they're not driving to the hole this playoffs. They're shooting. LeBron does lead the playoffs in most assists on three-pointers this postseason, but it's a different LeBron. It's a different style of offense played, so we can't really compare it too much to the last year's 2015 Finals. But like I mentioned earlier, that death lineup that the Warriors used the last three closeout games to win that Finals, they didn't even have to use them at all during the regular season for the Cavaliers.
And LeBron last year, he went ridiculous in the Finals, which nobody even notices because they lost. But he was averaging 35.8 points per game with 13.3 rebounds and 8.8 assists in 46 minutes averaging. And he played 274 minutes out of the potential 288 minutes for all the games. And the next Cavs player to even be close was 247 minutes for Tristan Thompson. He 30 more minutes played than the next Cavs player. That's almost another entire game. But LeBron James, he's going to have to fall back a little bit. I do see those numbers decreasing with Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving been out there. But the problem is, as you said, LeBron James, he leads on all three-point assists because his dribble penetration with kickout ability, and if those guys are hitting, it's going to be dangerous to stop. But he does not have consistent shooters. Channing Frye has been their most consistent shooter at this point, and I just do not see him being effective because the Warriors' on-ball defense and switch defense is amazing outside the perimeter when they're playing their game. And especially after going through this tough series with the Thunder, I see them being ready to play, no mistakes, especially in the first game at home.
We've seen the Cavs go off and be shooting these three-pointers. Like you said, you don't know about the reliable options. They're shooting 43%, which is the best in playoffs right now, but they only shot 36% during the regular season. And right now, you've got J.R. Smith just hacking up threes. He's taken 106 of his 123 shots from behind the three-point arc. And JR will be JR. Hot JR, cold JR. It happens in a minute. And I've seen it many times being a Knicks fan and seeing it in person and what he did in the playoffs when they actually were in the playoffs. And he just choked, just did terrible. So we got to see what happens if the Cavaliers decide to try to get into a shootout with the Splash Brothers and the Golden State Warriors. That cannot be the best strategy.
It can't. I think the best strategy would be not guarding J.R. Smith, because as he said plenty of times before, he loves to be guarded. If he's open, he probably will miss it, but if he's guarded, sometimes I just don't understand it, but he will drain it, and it's kind of scary how that happens. I would say leave him open on every time, giving him the Tony Allen treatment, even though he does not deserve it one bit. But we can't overlook LeBron also. You have to understand that you're playing the best player in the game, and I agree with the statement about being most valuable and being the best player, I would still consider LeBron the best player, and he showed it. The first non-Celtic in history to go to 6 straight NBA Finals. That is an accomplishment as it is, and his experience is going to do them wonders, because he's actually, as Marcus said earlier, Coach LeBron. He's taking that role and understood that because he's good enough to understand he can jump in and fit in at any point, and he's taken a lot of time to watch this team grow, and he understands how this team plays, but it's not going to be up to him. I know LeBron will be LeBron. He will do as well as he can, but those other guys need to be able to contribute to give them any chance, because the Warriors' bench and their depth is going to hurt them badly.
You can't stop LeBron. You can only hope to contain LeBron, which is what we saw a little bit of with Andre Iguodala last year in the Finals. Like we said, LeBron still had pretty damn good numbers if you just look at the stat line, just look at points, points, points. But like I said, he shot 24 from 90, 27% from outside of the paint. Andre Iguodala was all over him. LBJ shot 38% versus Andre Iguodala in that series. So anytime he was sticking on him, we might see that same adjustment made in Game 7 and might see Andre Iguodala in the starting lineup for the series.
Yeah, the only way to contain LeBron is to force him to shoot. That is your best option, because he does not have a good shot, which still surprised me after being in the league this long. He's going to drive. You have to hope he doesn't get fouled, and you just have to hope he misses, because his driving ability is ridiculous. He's too fast, too big, too strong, and too good. You have to force him to shoot the ball. He only shot 31
41% from the field in the three-point during the 2015 NBA Finals, and that's what you got to contain him. And Iggy did so well with that. And Iggy's hands in the passing lanes and before he even is able to get a shot up is going to be huge, because his defense has gotten better, if that's even possible to say, because he's such a great on-ball defender. But it's gotten better. I've seen glimpses of greatness that I did not see last year. And LeBron's going to see a different type of Iggy, and I can completely see them having him start the majority of these games against him, because containing LeBron from the get-go is going to be a lot harder than containing Kevin Durant from the get-go.
Yeah, you want to go after him quick, because LeBron can just do so much. He's 6'8" point guard running the field. You haven't seen anything since like that since Magic Johnson, but no doubt you can only hope to contain him. But that's the thing. You got to see what's changed now, because when it was LeBron and his own team, we saw the plus-minus numbers. Golden State had the advantage in the fourth quarter and overtime. Where was LeBron in those big moments? That's my thing. I haven't really seen him in too many big moments in his career. A few highlights here and there, but I've seen plenty of missed shots. So I want to see LeBron take over, because if he loses this final, he goes to 2-5?
Yep.
2-5. You know, he doesn't want to hear that for the rest of his life. So that's the thing. Vegas has him as underdogs right now, but LeBron got asked. He said, no, I don't believe in that, because he's got to know. You can't be looking at me and calling me an underdog right now, and then if I lose, you're going to say, well, you're 2-5. So you can't be looking at it like that. But we got to see what has changed, not only from the 2015 finals, but the regular season. The biggest thing, obviously, Tyronn Lue has taken over. He has played faster. He shot more three-pointers. He's moved Tristan Thompson to center. He moved him to starting lineup. Hasn't even been playing Mozgov. But that small ball lineup, it just has me thinking that they've been trying to get ready for this Warriors team all year long.
And I don't think Tyronn Lue, he got stuck in like a Spoelstra position where he got set with greatness. And it's very hard to lose when you have LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love, especially LeBron as mature as he is this point in his career, because he understands that he is the best, but there's other ways of helping the team than just being the on-court floor general. And I've seen it the entire year when he took those weeks off, when David Blatt was like towards the end of his tenure for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and when Tyronn Lue stepped in. Tyronn Lue, you can see at times where LeBron James is truly running that team, but Tyronn Lue understands that he can take that back seat and still get the respect as a head coach, but allowing LeBron James to run this offense and this entire team the way he would like, because he knows what is best for him, which is best for the Cleveland Cavaliers as an entire organization. They need to win a ring, and they're hopeless over there. You know how bad these people want a ring over there. They got the crowd for it, but can they step up and play? The Warriors, the past three games, have made me happy, because I have not seen them play that good of basketball, and it hasn't even been great basketball, right? But I have not seen them play that well and that consistent, especially from the entire playoffs. I feel like every game has been a toss-up. There hasn't been many games where we've just won, like, as shown as the team that we were throughout the entire season. So I'm excited. This is about to be an interesting finals. I think it's going to be a lot more interesting last year. Some people are thinking that the Warriors are just going to come in here and just have a cakewalk with LeBron. And to me, I think a lot differently.
No, exactly. This is a different team. And the way that the Cavs are playing right now, they definitely have the rest advantage, even though the Warriors have the home court advantage, because LeBron during the year was coasting a little bit, took a lot more games off than he should. Maybe that's part of the reason why he didn't win MVP, LeBron. You ain't playing as much games as Steph. But you just got to see, it's a whole nother team for the Cavs. They're playing faster. They're shooting more threes. Like I said, they're shooting 43% from the three-point line in the playoffs. That's the best in the postseason out of anybody. It's better than the Warriors. But even though they only shot 36% during the regular season. So, like I said, I don't think you want to get into a pissing contest with the Splash Brothers.
No, you do not at all. But if their key guys are hitting from them on the outside, if Channing Frye is getting four threes a game and J.R. Smith putting another four or five, the Warriors are going to have to watch out. It could be deadly, because then if you're going to allow Kevin Love, Kyrie, and LeBron to not even be the factor that you have to watch out, especially on switching on those defensive plays, you're going to have to worry about another man that isn't part of their big three, and that changes up your entire defense, because that's so much more one-on-one basketball that against superstars that they have, it's going to be tough to win, because they are stars and they can score by themselves. They do not need anybody else. So this is going to be tough, because if they can hit the threes and do get in a battle, I think the bench players are going to have to step up for the Warriors, and Harrison Barnes is going to need to be able to hit those open threes. Iggy's going to have to hit those, and the consistency hasn't been there, especially with Harrison, who's not earning his contract. As a GM, I'd probably want to pay him less than what he got offered, the 40 or 64 before the season. I think that's the best option he possibly has to like go back for that, unless he steps up. But if he steps up now and through the NBA Finals, that contract could easily raise. All it takes is 2-3 games.
Oh, yeah. He's got a huge opportunity to fatten that paycheck right now in this Finals, because if he has a huge series, he's going to get paid. But that's the thing. It's all about matchups in this series. And if you look down at the roster for the Warriors and the Cavs, don't get me wrong, Cavs got some good players, but the Warriors got the advantage in almost every single position except for LeBron James, small forward.
Yeah, and we'll see how that works out if Iggy's going to start. I could see them not starting him game one to see it, feel it out, and I could see the second half him starting if we're down and LeBron is tearing us up. But I think Bogut's going to need to stay big, and one person, Anderson Varejao, who the first person in NBA history, a little fun fact, to be no matter what, if he loses or wins, he still gets a ring because he played enough game with the Cavaliers to get that as be part of their team. So if they win, he gets a ring. And if the Warriors win, he gets a ring because he's on the team. So for him, I think the Warriors need to tell him, I know you get a ring, but we need you to get this ring legitly. We need this ring. And I hope that he could come in big because he knows this team. He's been on that team. He's been with LeBron to multiple finals, especially every time with the Cavaliers. He knows how he plays, especially from the early time of his career and for the past year. So he's going to be big for us. And him and Barbosa out on the floor together, I absolutely love it.
Right. That's going to be huge for the matchup between the benches. I think Spates will come in and hit a few threes. And Sean Livingston was huge last year in the finals. So I look for him to have a big series too. But the matchups, we'll see what Cavalier lineup is going to go out. The starting lineup that I said moved to a starting small ball lineup with Tristan Thompson on it, they've only played 3 minutes against the Warriors in that regular season, both those game matchups. So they haven't played too much. The Warriors haven't seen too much of that combination, but we'll see because the Cavaliers are on fire right now. The shooting percentages, we mentioned them a couple of times, and no one's shooting as hot as them. But we have seen some glimpse of what the Warriors 7-3 historic season has been going on in the playoffs because the death lineup has still outscored opponents or 141 to 109 per 48 minutes, and they're still the best fourth quarter team, outscoring opponents by 16.4 points per every 100 possession. And we're looking at Curry. We saw he was beat down. Everybody said, is he out of it? Is he hurt? What's wrong? Can he not shoot anymore? But he's 9 for 12 on clutch threes. That's threes in the last 5 minutes of the game. He's also shooting 51% from mid-range, the best in the playoffs. So Curry's still playing well. Draymond, we saw he's not doing well offensively. He came back later in the series. He leads the playoffs with 271 contested shots. People are shooting 38% against Draymond Green at the rim. So that's going to be huge if LeBron's going to decide to drive, if they go back to some of that older style they're playing. We'll see if they stay small. If they go big, Timothy Mozgov had a pretty good series last year. So if he goes big, maybe then we'll see Varejao and those guys. But if they want to go to that small ball lineup and challenge the Warriors, what they're known at.
I think that Bogut can run with their small ball lineup, and I think he could be very effective. I just hope that he's working on them free throws because they might look back and see what Billy Donovan did that was pretty effective at the points in the game that he was using. Bogut was missing those shots, and it just hurt the whole flow and rhythm of the Warriors' offense. So it could be big. It also is going to see – it's going to take a lot of Tyronn Lue's coaching because he's going to need to actually put his coaching thoughts and his coaching experience into this, which is no experience, but his playing experience, which he played for a very long time in the NBA, has won championships with the Lakers, and he's going to have to really step it up because those late game situations where they're going to be looking at him instead of LeBron, he's going to need to come up with something to have those players motivated and not look at him as I look at him, like the scene of Allen Iverson stepping over him.
Right, just that, getting stomped over.
That is the classic Tyronn Lue picture in my head, is him getting stomped over by Allen Iverson. So we'll see how he can do and handle, because this is going to be the hardest thing Tyronn Lue's ever had to do, even over playing, is going to be coaching against this historic Warriors basketball team and trying to beat them in a 7-game series, as Oklahoma City just shown, is not easy to do.
Not easy at all. And you talk about late game situations. I remember one of the games versus the Raptors, Kevin Love was out and sat out the whole fourth quarter, or 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, because he hurt his foot, but he said he could go back in. We'll be interested to see what he does with Kevin Love, if he sticks with Kevin Love, because KDOT has been struggling a little bit in his playoffs. He's shooting 32% in the paint. Like I said, he's gotten a little bit skinnier since he was in Minnesota, but if he can have one of those games where he has 15 plus rebounds, he can be a factor. And then if he stepping out and hitting his three, he's expanding the court for LBJ to get to the hole easily. So he'll be getting some open lanes if they go to that small ball lineup. But the Warriors, the small ball lineup, the historic. We talked about all the records. We talked about Klay set the record for threes in a game. Curry and Thompson both hit the record for most threes in a series. But look at what else Klay's done. He's hit 23 corner threes, and he leads the playoffs in catch and shoot threes. So we talked about LeBron leads the playoffs in assist on three-pointers, but the Warriors, they move the ball more like a hockey team. It's assist, 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 assist. So they might not have Curry leading the team in assists on three-pointers, but they move the ball, and Klay Thompson is catching them and putting them up.
Klay's catch-and-shoot ability is ridiculous. As we saw in Game 6, he wasn't even looking at the hoop when he was catching some of those shots and just putting them up. But Corey Matthews is Corey Matthews, and he is the great Corey Matthews, because we are going to need him to step up. His catch and shoot ability is going to be huge for us, because it allows the littlest of time to get up a shot. And coming off a screen, that little second is so key. And for him, that little second makes it a horrible shot to an amazing shot, and a shot that you would expect him to hit. And especially his confidence is such at an enormous high. I've never seen anybody with more confidence than him. He could miss 100 shots, but he will take that 101st shot as if he just made the last 100. And that is something that we're going to need, especially in a long series. This is not going to be a cakewalk for the Warriors. This is going to be a tough team who's tough at home to beat and are playing a different type of style that we have not witnessed yet. And it could take a little second for the Warriors to get acclimated to this new type of series, because they're going to be coming fast. This game is going to have to be won on our pace. We're going to need to slow it down into the Warriors type of basketball, keep that ball moving, and I could see this going to 6 or 7. What do you think?
I definitely think it has a chance to go to 7. And let me tell you why. LeBron was able to leg it out and take it to 6 last year. And you got to think now with a healthy team, I think they might be able to stretch it out to 7. My confidence is with Golden State. Historic season, historic year. Curry MVP 2.0. I've never seen a guy win an MVP of the league and be damn near unanimous most improved player of the league at the same time. Like I said, Iggy's improved. Klay's improved. I look at Klay to be a huge factor. I think he might be the MVP of this series if Curry doesn't want to just go shine on, because he's got to shut up everybody about not winning an MVP last year. But I think the Warriors will take it in 7.
I think it's going to be a tough series. LeBron is going to have to overwork. He's going to have to give it 150%. And unless Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love can both equally be supportive in their nature, they need to put up. Kyrie's got to put up over 20 a game. Kevin Love, they're going to need at least over 15 from you a game, especially you're going to need to get a double-double. Tristan Thompson, he's going to be their X factor, because in this small ball lineup, it was easier for him to work as a four against somebody that's his size or most likely smaller because he's a big four. But now playing at the five, he has Bogut or Festus on him. Festus is athletic and he's pretty big and he could push him back. But I see this going 6, just like last year, but not as easy as last year. There was a couple games where, you know, it was already gone by the end of towards the end of the fourth. I think these are going to be hard, gritty, tough fought games. I see every game almost going towards the last 2 minutes and somebody just making that extra push, which I see, as you said, Klay, I can easily see him being the NBA Finals MVP. But for me, the biggest X factor is going to be Harrison Barnes. He's going to need to come in there and show that he can do this, because I believe that Sean Livingston will not have as bad as a series as he had against the Thunder. He's going to be able to back down Dellavedova on the second unit and be able to get that post jumper in. But Harrison Barnes, if he is stuck in that starting lineup, is going to have to play defense on LeBron and has to play it well. And he's getting those open looks and he has to just drain those corner threes. As I've been saying this entire playoffs, earn your contract. I see the Warriors in 6.
Yeah, it will definitely be a historic series. We can't say definitely, but we think it will be one of the greatest series we've seen since the Warriors won. That's why, because this is the Bay's golden days. But it should be a great series. You know, we'll keep you updated this whole entire series. We'll come back with another podcast, probably Game 4, Game 7. Keep wrapped up the whole entire thing. We're going to keep rocking with you. It's the Bay's golden days.
Yes, sir.
Steady gold, pony boy.